You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The BC Teachers Union won a major victory in April. The BC Court of Appeal backed a demand for more resources for teachers and classrooms. The court approved an appeal by the Teachers Federation regarding a ruling on class sizes. The ruling supported the union position that if a limit on the size of a class is exceeded, a board must provide extra resources to that class. The union believes that the province now has to act to adequately fund the school system. The issue of funding has been a controversial one. Public education advocates believe that the system has been systematically underfunded for decades. Joining us to discuss this issue is Eden Haythorne-Thwaite. She is a school trustee for Cowichan School District 79. Good morning, Eden, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning, Sean. How you doing?
Good. I thought we would just start with the funding shortfall then. Can you give us some idea of the scope of the funding shortfall which school boards have been facing?
Well, I can speak mostly about Cowichan, and I have every reason to believe that, many districts are in our situation. This year we cut about $1.4 to $5 million, a million of which has come straight out of classrooms. Now that's a, we're a district that has 8,000 students, so we're kind of a medium-sized district, but the impacts have been very damaging. We've lost specialist positions. We've lost our technology coordinator. We've had to increase our class sizes. There's a whole range of things. If you go back 1 year, we only have to go back 1 year, and there's almost $3 million have been removed from classrooms and from services, like busing, custodial, and that sort of thing. We have, for instance, in our schools, last year we instituted a seven-year layoff for all custodians, which has meant that seven-week layoff, which has meant that our classrooms are not getting the attention they need despite the best efforts of these people.
And when you cut something like busing, what does that mean exactly for students?
Well, in a rural district like ours, and ours is a mixed district and a very large one, where we have kids who, many of whom live long distances from their schools, and even if they live within what you or I might consider to be reasonable walking distance, our policy says, I believe, 4 kilometers, very often these walk routes are not safe for the kids. They are not on sidewalks. They are not on lit roads. And what it has meant is that we've lost ridership. The cuts to busing have meant that we're now not busing nearly as many kids as we were. I believe the last cuts impacted about 1,200 students. So it's a combination of problems. Of course, parents are loath to allow their children to walk if the walking isn't safe. So there's a lot more traffic on the roads and a lot more congestion around our schools. It has environmental impact. And of course, our bus drivers lose income, which is another grave consideration.
You mentioned one of the ways of dealing with this is to increase class sizes. That seems odd given that one of the arguments that the government often makes is that we're seeing declining enrollment in public schools.
Well, declining enrollment is a completely false argument, and for a number of reasons. I had a quote, lawless is he who makes his will the law. It's Shakespeare. The government looked very cynically at the potential for some decline in public school enrollment and then built their funding formula around headcount. Well, if you don't build your funding formula around headcount, then a few kids more or less is just a demographic artifact. It's just a planning issue. We could easily build our funding formula around needs. So, but the extended problem is that it's not just each student that contributes expense and cost to the district. There's a lot of fixed costs. There's a lot of costs that aren't covered by the government. They don't cover our labor settlement costs provincially. They don't cover off inflation. These are the things that are impacting us. And even though the government will tell you that they're giving us a few more dollars per student, all you have to do is look at deteriorating conditions in our classrooms to know that we are underfunded.
I know that one of the solutions that some school boards have devised to deal with funding shortfalls is the deficit budget or the no-cuts budget. Have any school boards in BC attempted to do this?
From what I know, and it certainly recently, the closest that we have come, and I don't know yet what the outcome has been or will be, is that Saanich School District basically filed. They didn't pass a budget bylaw because that is something that is difficult to do without the collaboration of your secretary-treasurer. So what they did was they built a budget plan. The budget plan actually provided, filed a budget number that was $2.8 million above what the revenue that they were going to receive in anticipating further provincial grants. And the $2.8 included $300,000 in cuts that they were considering. The rest of it was all programs and services that they wished to put back into their classrooms that they had reviewed and found absolutely necessary. So Saanich has actually been very bold and very brave. You don't legally have to file a budget bylaw till June 30th, and I believe that their hope was that there would be some acknowledgement of their needs by the government by taking this step.
What are the possible outcomes to this the solution in Saanich? What do you see? How do you see that unfolding?
Well, best case scenario is that the government looks at it, reviews it, and feels that perhaps they're right. They do need an extra $2.8 million. I think that's probably unlikely. The likely outcome is that the government will return the budget plan to the board and instruct them to file a balanced budget by June 30th.
Mm-hmm. Now, the recent Court of Appeals decision addresses one specific area, class size. Can you tell me what has happened to class size since 2002 in public schools?
Well, it's going to vary from system to system, but in our district, we have, generally speaking, the district, the superintendent is required by Bill 33 to report out to the Board of Trustees each month on what we call the organization of classes. It's a tremendously awkward and bureaucratic process that was put in place several years after they passed Bills 27 and 28, which ripped all the class size and composition language out of the teachers' collective agreement. And Bill 33 requires this reporting out and sets some very meager, miserable standards for class size and composition, which we're not even really required to meet, provided the teacher is consulted with in the upper grades. What we usually have is at least 200 classes in Cowichan out of 1,200, which feature either class size or composition overages. So that's what is happening in Cowichan. We have composition problems. In one of our schools, you'll have up to 7 or 8 children in a class that are that have designations, that have individual education plans, and very little in the way of support.
Support means special staff, additional staff which are trained to deal with the special needs problems?
Absolutely. Well, there's these the kids who have challenges, it's not enough to simply have a teacher in the classroom. The teacher is there to provide, the core learning opportunities, and these children need more than that. And in fact, many of our kids need more than that, whether they're designated or not.
Now, the government, the Court of Appeals has ruled that the government has to go back and think about this class size issue. How do you see them dealing with this decision?
Well, they've been given a year, as of April, to sit down with teachers and negotiate around this matter. And I suppose what the intention is that the language around class size and composition is to be replaced in their collective agreement. A best-case scenario is that we get much better language. We get language that's better than they had in 2002. But even if they do get better language, my strong concern is that come next April, we will be faced with a bittersweet dilemma. There will be some language in their collective agreement that will improve the requirements, but that the government will not fund this. They will simply download it onto districts. And districts have not taken steps at this time to build any contingency into their budgets. And the only way they could have done that is by tendering a deficit budget.
So the government is basically, it sounds like they're not dealing with it at all.
No. It's in character. Anytime extra costs come down the pipe, we're simply told, and usually the language of the letter will be, thank you for your patience and understanding. We're simply told, you will pay this. You will pay this.
Well, you've talked about the deteriorating conditions in classrooms in terms of class size and special needs, as well as things like busing. I wonder if private schools are going to start filling the vacuum that is created by lowering the quality of private education. Do you see a trend there?
It's already going on, and in some places more than others. You know, I think in a district like Cowichan, we have a large number of very high-profile private schools that operate. We have sort of faith-based ones. We have, you know, we have other ones that are not faith-based. But the figures from the ministry indicate that there's somewhere between 17 and 29% of our kids, of our school-age kids, depending on whether we're talking about elementary, middle, or high school, who are actually attending private schools in Cowichan rather than attending public schools. And it's almost invariably because parents have become frustrated and impatient with the public system. They don't feel they're in a position to lobby or to work with collectively with everyone else to improve the situation. They feel there's an urgency for their children, so they simply remove them from the public system. And they're lost to us. And not only are their children lost to us, but their fighting spirit is lost to us.
And do you think this is a, I wonder, do you think this is a deliberate policy on the part of the government? And by that I mean, if education is privatized, then that takes the expense of education off the books of the province.
Well, you know, I can't read their minds. I can only, you know, if it looks and quacks like a, if it looks and sounds like a duck, it's probably a duck. So I have to assume that this is part of an ideological agenda. I hate using those terms because it sounds like it's a conspiracy, but I guess if it's out in the open, it's not. It's very clear to me that our, you know, a lot of our declining enrollment, you know, they tell us that, you know, we're suffering shortfalls because of declining enrollment. I think we're actually suffering, you know, that declining enrollment itself is creating a lot of the shortfalls. You know, when we close a school, and we've closed 8 in Cowichan in the last 10 years, on the understanding that this will save us money, we invariably lose enrollment. We always lose enrollment. We save very little money. And, of course, when you lose enrollment, you lose funding. So everything that happens to us, it doesn't matter what it is, costs us enrollment. And, of course, those kids either go into a homeschooling situation or they may go to another district or they go to private. And it's almost become a cascade. The more enrollment we lose, the more resources we find ourselves without, which means we lose more enrollment, and those kids have to go somewhere. And I think the government is perfectly happy to see the private schools take up this slack. And they also fund the private schools. So it's not off the public books at all. That is a very grave misunderstanding. We pay a lot of money to private schools. In fact, between 2002 and 2006, you know, public education funding went up about just under 2%, whereas it went up almost 20% for private schools.
Can you elaborate a little on that? What do you mean private schools receive public funding? What areas would they receive public funding for?
Well, there's a formula. They receive public funding based on the level of funding in that district, and it's a percentage of that funding. It's either, you know, they receive a percentage of the public funding that is received in the district. So they do get a lot of public money. I mean, they obviously also have money from their tuition and also from donations and private donations. They do quite well. And you know, whereas when we have a designated kid in our system, in the public system, we get, you know, we get a certain amount of formulaic money for special needs. But it never meets 100% of the services that are triggered by the designation. But in the private system, those schools get 100% of the services triggered by a designation.
Well, Eden, I know that you as a school trustee are working to preserve the quality of public education. Any suggestions as to how ordinary citizens can do the same?
Well, I think that people have to, you know, this is the only way this it can possibly be solved is through democracy. And I almost never talk to anybody who doesn't believe that public education is a priority. So it seems to me that this is a very undemocratic approach. If the entire province wants its money spent on our public schools and on our children, and it's not happening, then we have a crisis in democracy. People have to start demanding the right to decide what budgets look like. We need community budgeting. We don't just need a change in the funding formula that's going to allow the government to excuse itself further. We need the full involvement of parents and teachers and support workers and all the people who are involved in public education and community members to build budgets that will meet the needs of our kids. And I think it's possible, but, you know, we're going to have to demand a democracy, which, you know, is no small thing, but it's absolutely critical.
Well, Eden, thanks so much for going through all of this with us on a Saturday, and hopefully we can take this up again.
I hope so, Sean.
I've been speaking with Eden Haythorne-Thwaite. She is a school trustee for Cowichan School District 79.